Bandcamp.com.
The best in live music entertainment is coming this spring to Bethesda Theater. Let's welcome music royalty, The Whispers, performing all their classic songs for two big shows on Friday, April 26th at 8:30 p.m. and again on Saturday, April 27th at 8 p.m. Also coming is Trouble Funk, featuring go-go legend Big Tony, celebrating his birthday by performing all their go-go classics on Friday, May 3rd at 9 p.m. And on Mother's Day, it's Howard Hewitt performing his own popular songs and those by Shalimar, for two shows on Sunday, May 12th at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. The Whispers on April 26th and 27th, Trouble Funk featuring Big Tony on May 3rd, and Howard Hewitt on Mother's Day, May 12th. Get more information on all shows at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Theater.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing.
I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
With the finger roll, plus the foul.
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day, or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to the collision. He's Atan Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin. Here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW, where we are trying to change the world one broadcast at a time. Atan Thomas, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing? How you doing, Chuck?
Yeah, how you doing, Chuck Modiano? Oh, Chuck, you're on mute there, buddy. Okay, Chuck's on mute, so we got to get him getting off mute. So, because Chuck right now is at the encampment at GW and the Solidarity Encampment with the people of Palestine. We just lost Chuck. Hopefully, we'll get him back. Now, this encampment, it's on. Everyone's talking about it as the GW encampment. It's actually all the schools from the area ending on GW and creating this encampment down there.
Wow.
And it's the first one in D.C. People from UMD coming in from College Park to be a part of it. I mean, it's making national news a very big deal. And we got Chuck on the scene there to tell us about it. Obviously, we have so much to discuss this week, put it mildly. But I'm not even sure how much time we're going to have with Chuck. So let me go to him right now. Chuck Modiano, can you hear me, sir?
I can hear you. Can you hear me, sir?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Tell us, we want to talk about everything that's happening in the country over the last couple of weeks since we've all been together, frankly, both off the field and on. But you are where the news is happening, and that's news that's going out nationally. So why don't you tell us what you're seeing right now at the D.C., Maryland, Virginia encampment being held at George Washington University.
Right. The DMV encampment, it started around 3 a.m. this morning. I was getting texts last night. I actually woke up early. I didn't realize. And then I see texts. Hey, can you make it down? This is like 5 a.m. And I don't normally wake up at 5 a.m. But I did, just happenstance. So got down here. And you have, you know, really George Washington University putting up tents and saying, we're not leaving. You know, centering the mass graves that we, stories that we're hearing out of Gaza. But also, for those people who don't know, George Washington University has been protesting for quite some time now, even before October 7th, because their school has been in bed with weapons manufacturers. And so you'll hear chants like President Granberg, you can't hide, you are funding genocide. You'll hear that. And right now, there was a few moments ago, there was a lot of conflict. So I actually had a guest lined up who is a Palestinian American and George Washington University student. However, moments ago, literally around 9:59, an Israeli Zionist came by and was in protesters' faces with an Israeli flag to the point of absolute harassment. And I think police just pulled that person away because they weren't leaving. But you see these sorts of things because the idea is to get some kind of conflict going and let that conflict be the story. But one thing that they say very early on at these protests, they say two things. There are two rules. They say, quote unquote, we don't talk to police and we don't talk to Zionists. We're not here for it. That takes off the centering of what is going on in Gaza, which we're finding mass graves. So right now, this camp is starting. I don't see any signs that they will stop unless the university divests from those weapons manufacturers. But there's no sign that that will happen soon.
Well, or unless the police do a mass clearing like they've done in some cities. We saw this at the University of Texas. We saw the police at USC. We've seen scenes that are like nothing any of the three of us have ever seen in our lifetime in terms of police showing up in mass on campuses to shut down free speech. Is there any sense what the MPD is doing or what their plans are or how close they could be from doing that kind of violent clearing? Any sense of that?
There is a sense. It's a good question. Everything was a grain of salt. Because I interviewed a supportive faculty member out here in some ways working in a liaison. And I asked him just about that. This faculty member is supportive of the young people protesting, believes it's the right thing to do, but from that person's point of view, doesn't believe that you will see some of that police repression here. Now, that's just one point of view. That's his guess. We also have to know that there have been suspensions on this campus already. There has been student repression here already, but it just hasn't hit the police level that we're seeing in Austin, Texas, in Columbia University, and elsewhere.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Go ahead, Atom.
No. Yeah, I was going to say, watching these things that are happening in Colombia and the police reaction to it, and really in trying to change the narrative that is consumed with anti-Semitism. That's what I've been seeing all over the news. Whenever they report on a protest, a demonstration that is going on in on any college campus, they frame it as if it's really anti-Semitic and that Jewish students don't feel safe. And everything that I've been seeing has been quite the opposite of Jewish students saying, no, that's not what's going on here. You know, I feel perfectly safe where the Jewish students are standing in solidarity with the Palestinian causes, are trying to bring an end to this genocide and everything. What do you see right now as far as the campus climate, because that's always the question. What is the climate of the protests?
Well, first of all, it's a great question because, you know, the anti-Semitism has been weaponized, and really it's anti-Semitic against the scores of Jewish protesters that have been part of this movement since, you know, I mean, long before October 7th, but visibly since October 7th. So when someone says that, I say, which Jewish students are you talking about? Because we've had 1,000 Jewish students in D.C., marching, often, sometimes in integration, sometimes by themselves, to show that, to say not in our name. So we have Jewish students here. I haven't really asked. I haven't been here long enough on GW to gauge, sort of the presence there. But I do feel it's not as the conflict that we're seeing in Austin and the conflict that we're seeing elsewhere We don't see that just yet. That could always change. But I can speak to the D.C. movement. And every protest I've been to, no matter who's leading it, there's a Jewish presence there. There's an anti-Zionist presence there. And I don't even like to say anti-Zionist anymore at this point. I like to just say anti-genocide. Because it's not even about one's ideology or this or that. Are you anti-genocide? Are you for killing babies? Or are you against killing babies? This is not that hard. So we have many anti-Zionist, anti-genocide Jewish protesters every day. And I think we have to continue to highlight that because we're going against the billion-dollar industry that is trying to redefine what anti-Zionism is.
Now, for folks who don't know, a couple of things. If people are listening from, you know, online or Philadelphia or far away where our signal goes, they should know that GW University is a 5-minute walk from the White House. And one has to think that also has to be a consideration of the optics. I mean, think about the optics at USC or the optics at Texas and how ugly they were. I'm not saying they're above doing that to GW, not by a long shot, because we've seen kettling, we've seen police abuse at protests, we've seen this in DC for a long time. But that also would be, as they say, quite the sticky wicket, Chuck, if you have a mass displacement of protesters at the end of a police baton, just a 5-minute walk from the White House.
You're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. Here's the one thing I could say about these protests. They're different in this form than I've seen. We're in election year. Joe Biden is being harmed in the polls, and rightfully so, because he is funding genocide. And we just saw the House Senate say, hey, you know what, add $26 billion more, like days after we hear all these concerns from Biden or concerns from Schumer. Well, the way you express your concern is to not vote for $26 billion more. So that has happened. And with that, what's been so interesting is that the police have laid off protesters. And here's why. The bad media attention it gets is more harmful to re-election than arresting people. So I believe in another year, certainly George Floyd protest, there would be arrests. And even in pro-Palestinian anti-genocide protests on another year, I think you'd see arrests. Not this year. Everything is related to a media lens. And having covered DC police for about 12 years now, you can tell when they get a stand down order. When there was the State of the Union address and everybody was posted outside the Capitol and delayed Biden's State of the Union address, we knew that they got a stand down order because we see how they behave. And basically it was don't upstage the State of the Union. So in some ways you have to leverage that. And people are saying we need to leverage that to keep making noise until we could stop this genocide.
Wow. Yeah. Powerful stuff, Chuck. Thank you so much for bringing us this news. Etan Thomas, I mean, to expand this out a little bit, unless you, of course, you have more questions for Chuck. I was curious about like your view in watching these encampments explode over the, because we haven't spoken in the last couple of weeks. And frankly, it's a different world today than it was a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. What have you seen that's been the most striking to you at with this explosion of activism at now dozens of campuses around the country?
I mean, it's encouraging to see young people, you know, searching for the truth. You hear a lot of Jewish students on a lot of different interviews saying that they were taught one thing their entire life. They were taught Zionism from the time that they were, you know, 3 or 4 years old. And then upon, you know, meeting different Palestinian students or speaking to different people or just learning more, doing their own research or whatever the topic is, or whatever what happened, they come to a different view of, you know, this is not fair. This is not right. And it, you know, that speaks to, you know, indoctrination that happens from a young age, you know, when you're talking about Zionism. And it that part is very sad to hear that that's how they're being indoctrinated. But it's very encouraging to see all of the campuses all around the country with young people protesting and using their voices, and faculty. I got to give it up to some of the faculty that have joined them and they have, you know, put their jobs on the line, put their everything on the line, because you know how it works with faculty in most universities. They bring the hammer down if you do something against administration. Faculty is taking upon themselves to say, no, we have to stand with the students on this. This is not right. We cannot, you know, support what is going on with the genocide. So that part is very encouraging to see.
Yeah, and I have been blown away the last couple of weeks by a couple of things. And obviously, Chuck, if there's any breaking news there or something, just please interrupt us and let us know what's happening there at the encampment. Goes without saying. But there have been two aspects for me, Etan, that have been mind-blowing. I mean, the first is that the people who are defending what Israel's doing have been left with nothing but slander at this point. The encampments are anti-Semitic. These people are pro-Hamas. Netanyahu comparing it to Nazi Germany in the 1930s, the presence of these encampments. That's all they have left because they have no material, truthful argument for why they are doing what they are doing in Gaza right now. There is there's no justification left for killing over 35,000 people, for setting records in war times for the number of reported amputations of children's limbs. I mean, the stories are so horrific. Every day there's more and more, but it's becoming hard to find the articles in the mainstream media because they keep pushing so hard this idea that these encampments are making Jewish students feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. Yet the craziest thing is even the – Etan, you mentioned – I want to mention these students as well. You mentioned the Jewish students who are actually part of the encampments, who are central to the encampments, who are holding Passover Seders this week in the encampments, who are telling the story of Exodus, that is the story of Passover, from the perspective of anti-oppression and finding freedom. You know, this is an amazing thing that's happening. There are those Jewish students – then you have the Jewish students who are, you know, going to the press and saying they feel unsafe and trying to shut it down. But you also have a mass of Jewish students, Etan, who I'm hearing from, who are saying, well, I'm not with the encampment, but I don't feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. Or I'm not with the encampment, but I think they should have the right to speak.
Right.
Like, those are the students I feel are being ignored most of all, the ones who are actually on the ground at places like Columbia saying, you know what? This is their right as students to try to have their voices heard. Now, and I think those students, Etan, are the ones who have the most potential to be radicalized when they see, like, for example, at Columbia, maybe later today, the National Guard coming to clear the encampment, an echo of Kent State 50 years ago. I mean, the fact that, my goodness, that this is coming to our campuses again in our lifetimes is so staggering to me. Right. But that's what's striking to me. And I have to throw down as well that, you know, I grew up walking distance from Columbia University. And so to see, you know, video, I haven't been to New York, but to see all the video of that campus just being transformed through struggle and the fearfulness I have about the sight of the National Guard marching on those students, It's just so out of tune with the campus that I used to sneak on to play touch football. It just speaks to me about how transformative what's happened really is.
I definitely agree. Chuck, talk to us a little bit more about, because there, you know, this is just started on GW. So you're having some of the breaking news and really showing exactly what's happening and tell the world what's going on. Talk to us a little bit more about how everything is forming.
Okay. I'm gonna do that, and then I'm gonna slide off and let you two, you know, take it the rest of the way, and on the back end talk about my Knicks up 2-0 and nobody saw any fouls. But this is more important right now. We're gonna talk about GEW within the spectrum of sort of DC. So, you know, you learn patterns covering DC for a while, and one of the big critiques of DC is that you have these street movements in Ferguson, everybody came out in George Floyd, everybody came out. But there was a separation between those street movements and the colleges, which historically had such an incredible role. I mean, I think that my favorite, you know, moment, one of my favorite moments in history is the Greensboro Four, And the reason I love the Greensboro Four is that it started with four individuals say, we're going to do this sit-in, right? And then it spread like wildfire, like in 2 weeks. And it was every college campus across the country by the end of the first week. And what I loved about that story is that nobody was named Martin Luther King. Nobody was named Malcolm X. Nobody was named Fannie Lou Hamer. Nobody was named these names. Most people don't know the names of the Greensboro Four. They were just four people who said, we want to change things. And that's what we're seeing on these campuses now. And in D.C., we've had sort of a bit of a divide. Part of that divide has been the corporatization of universities and that they're going to, if people are really scared of being expelled. But what I think what we're happening here, you're interviewing people and they're saying, I don't care if I'm expelled. We're seeing interviews. Whatever happens, happens. And I don't know if we've seen that sort of level of resistance. So there are some capitalistic forces that have gotten in the way of that unity, of that historical unity that happened maybe in the 60s. And in D.C., for the first time, I am seeing those two entities, the university students and the activists in the street and the regular protesters, come together and join forces. So it's very uplifting from that point of view, because we're in a moment, like right now, we're in a moment. The dominoes are falling and it's happening right now. So I'm very excited from that point of view. I'm not excited. It takes 40,000 lives to produce that, but here we are.
Wow.
And I think that what we're seeing right now in DC, at USC, at Texas, at dozens of schools, you know, it's nothing less than a generational revolt against the fact that we fund genocide. And I think one of the reasons why the response by politicians and by police has been so incredibly vicious, like incredibly vicious, open calls for the annihilation of the Palestinian people, open calls to throw people off of bridges who are blocking bridges by Senator Tom Cotton out of Arkansas, open fascist, who, by the way, also called for the military to put down Black Lives Matter protests. So just goes to show you, if people don't see the connections between those movements, Tom Cotton is certainly showing the connections for all of us. I mean, I think that the repression is so deep and so angry by the powers that be, because as Naomi Klein put it, you know, it's not let my people go anymore. It's we've already left and we got the kids with us. They're furious that their kids do not believe what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They're furious that we won. I'm talking about anti-Zionist Jews, of which I'm proudly one. We won this generation in a way that's unprecedented since 1948. And I think that that's what has them in a state of absolute frothing rage. That's my opinion.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. Chuck, hey, much respect to you for the work that you're doing. I know you got to go. We're going to let you go. And we definitely want to hear more about what is going on and what you're seeing and what your coverage. I'll be watching your social media. Everybody, please follow. What's your social media real quick? Because people have to see the interviews that you're doing and the things that you're posting and tweeting.
Well, you're on mute there, Chuck.
We'll give him social media then, no problem.
Let's see if we can get him back. Chuck's on mute, but we're gonna get him back.
I'm back. It's at ChuckMoD1. Yeah, check out the videos. We're gonna be just putting out more media content. And I would say the last thing I would say is shout out to DC Independent Media. There used to be a time where if one or two people didn't show up, it wouldn't be covered. That has changed. People are out here. The young people are out here. We have this new media, and that's why they're trying to ban it. They're trying to ban a TikTok so the word won't get out and to increase censorship. So that's my last word. Listen, you all take it from here and go Knicks, free Palestine.
Go Knicks, free Palestine. I hear that. And just for folks who are listening, that's Chuck Modi 1. That's ChuckModi, the number 1. I don't want people to think it's Chuck Modi, like Cool Modi or something. So Chuck Modi One. You can see all the interviews and everything that Chuck is doing right now. It's on. Wow.
It's a lot.
It's a lot, and it's in D.C., which is something that I've been waiting for. And to see it actually happen is really staggering. I mean, there are some campuses right now, Atan, because I've been hearing some folks where they're just saying straight up to students, you will be expelled if you do this.
Yes, they are. They definitely
are. You will be suspended. I mean, at University of Minnesota, hardly one of the Ivy Leagues, they are suspending students who've been in part of, who've been cleared from the encampment 1 year until they're allowed to return to campus.
That's crazy.
1 year. These are tuition paying students.
That's crazy.
You can't come back to campus for a year because you came to stop a genocide.
Yeah. And the way they're framing it, I was watching, we'll say this and we'll take a quick break. I was watching Mark Lamont Hill on TMZ yesterday. And they were framing it as if this was all of these protests, all of these demonstrations all across campus are supporting Hamas and they're supporting terrorism and they're supporting. And Mark Lamont Hill's like, well, no, I'm here on the grounds. That's not what I see at all. And then he kept going. He's like, well, you know, there's been and they'll have one example. And he said, well, wait a minute now. You know, if you're going to give one example, you know, and say that that's the whole, then that, you know, he's like, I can tell you that I denounced that one example if that's, you know, actually what happened and the person said that, but I have not seen that anywhere that I have been. And it's just interesting how, you know, and I tell that just because that is the level of media coverage that I've been seeing a lot with the topics of the protests going on different college campuses, that they are not only anti-Semitic, but that they're also supporting terrorism, that they're also supporting hate. And it's a anti, you know, in those type of frame. And that is just amazing how the media can shift an entire narrative so quickly and so deliberately. And that is something that we have to really watch with that because, you know, people will start believing it. That's why it's important that Chuck is doing the work and he's showing. He's like, no, this is what's happening here. That's why, you know, props to Mark Lamont Hill for, you know, he pushed back on everything that they said and was like, no, I'm here. This is not what's going on. And that, yeah, I got to give him props for that. But let's take a quick break.
But before and, we give Mark Lamont Hill props for one other thing.
Go for it. Yeah, sure.
He was recently offered a ton of money to go to Columbia and speak on some of this stuff. He turned it all down.
I did. See, he did mention that, too. He said he could not, in good conscience, go there and speak about freedom and justice while they're doing what they're doing to the students right now as we speak at Columbia. He said so he had to turn it down. Much respect to him for that, too.
Much respect. But as you said, let's go to break right now. This is The Collision on WPFW 89.3 FM, where we are trying to change the world one broadcast at a time.
I'm exhausted. Last night I couldn't sleep, but when I did, I could hear bombs in my dreams. Nightmare situation. How could they be so evil? Making mortars out of children and innocent people. We expect the bombs, not knowing where next. Huddle in the corner of my room, trying to protect my little brother as the building shakes like it's possessed. But nothing stronger than the will of the oppressed. I bomb back with my lyrics and rhymes, living the times, trying to break the Palestinian minds. What's hiding in the clouds hanging over my head? My dad risks his life outside to buy bread. The fourth war in my 12th year. At this stage, I'm numb, though I haven't feel scared. There's nothing I can do in this case to stay safe. I'm brave, even though this house could be in my grave. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location. Shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location. Shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. Mothers mourn, fighting with grief. White sheets covered by his death. Lie on the streets, buildings turn to ash. But my mind is made of steel, so it doesn't take much for me to heal. Won't lose the will to live or lose our minds. My auntie lost her home, so she lost her life. But she is still alive, but traumatized by the bombs that flew in and dropped that night. My sister couldn't sleep, tried to stop her cries. I said it was fireworks, I was telling her lies. Where's the compassion? This is heartless. It's like they want us all living in darkness. Cutting off water and electricity for hours. They're knocking towers, but that's not knocking the power that I have in my pen. When I'm writing, I'm unstoppable. The microphone is the only escape possible, cause that's the way that I can speak my mind. I wonder how does the fighter pilot sleep at night, knowing he can turn the city upside down all of a sudden, slaughtering families with the push of a button. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation.
Wow, we're back here on The Collision. 89.3 FM, WPFW. What a powerful track that was. This is where sports and politics collide, but also with a healthy, healthy spice of hip-hop. Atan, what were we listening to?
That was an MC Abu. The track was called Shouting at the Wall. Real talented young cat. He's a teenager, 13, 14 years old. You can look him up on YouTube. He's I'm glad that we let it play. You know, we let it play a little bit longer than we usually do, but you can hear his descriptions at 13, 14 years old as far as what's going on and what he sees looking out his window and the life that he has actually being there. You know what I mean? So real talented young cat, MC Abu.
MC Abu, really appreciate you finding that and playing that. Reminds me of the song Free Palestine by Son of None. Shout out Son of None. I kept having flashbacks to a track that's about 10, 15 years old that, I mean, is now looking like prophetic fire. But Atan, dare we make the transition to talking about the sports side of sports and politics?
Yeah, I mean, it's good for us to, you know, we do cover both. And it feels kind of a big jump when you have so much going on with one side and we're talking about with the protests. But we could definitely talk about it. We could definitely, I'd like to start at the Knicks. I saw you post about it. I posted about it. You know, there's a lot of controversy over the last, you know, 2 minute, what is it called? The 2 minute drill that they have, the report that comes out, what they found. I didn't see a foul, but
they didn't see a foul.
I didn't see a foul at all. But you know, I saw a lot of flopping. I did see that. And that's no disrespect to, you know, Maxi. He's a fantastic player. You know, definitely deserving of every award that he gets. And he's been really, you know, kind of since the James Harden trade, you know, been stepping into a whole different stratosphere as far as his level of play. So definitely no shade on him as well. But I didn't think he got fouled at that end. So I thought he flopped.
No, I certainly did not. I wanted to ask you, though, about this Knicks team and how far you think they can go. Let's pretend that, I mean, Philly's going to have to win 4 or 5 to win this series. Let's pretend that the Knicks get through this. No guarantee, of course, going to Philadelphia. Very tough place to play, very tough team, very good coach. Although I don't think he called a timeout, unless you count a lowercase t as a timeout. Timeout I've ever seen.
Hey, hold on. Let's stop right there for a second before we move on to it. But it's the whining though after the game. I mean, you when you see the replay and you see it shown, he almost called a timeout. Then he took it back. He moved his hands back. You could go as slow as you want to. Then he's looking around. Then the ball wasn't in possession. You can't call a timeout then. You have to wait until there's a possession. You know what I mean? Till somebody has possession of the ball. But he still didn't do his hands. I mean, I don't know. That part, I don't like when people do that. Sometimes you just got to give credit. They made some great plays at the end. Great. We'll see them next game. You know what I mean? But don't be like, you know, when we can see that you did kind of try to take the time out, but then you took it back. You took it back. So come on now. Don't do that.
You see, I'm not the biggest fan of the whining. I'm really not. Because if we want to, we can point to 15 different things. You were up 5 points with 26 seconds to go. I mean, or 40 seconds, whatever it was. But the point is that the Knicks scored 7 points in 25 seconds. The Villanova guys look amazing. DC's own Josh Hart is playing out of his mind. And, you know, I mean, Jalen Brunson's had some rough shooting, but it's like I still am such a mark for Jalen Brunson. I can't even begin to tell you.
Definitely.
And so how far? So I've got like several Knicks questions for you. First of all, how far do you think this team can go, assuming they get by Philadelphia? Look at Boston. They lost to the Heat last night. They don't look great. They have historic problems closing the deal in the playoffs. Can this? Is there a world where this Knicks team plays in the NBA Finals?
I mean, I think that this is the thing with us Knicks fans, and I'll include myself with it. You know what I mean? With all my family from New York, we want it all. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is. Oh. We want it all, and it's, you know, I'm rooting for them to do better each game. I don't know how far they could go. You know what I mean? Especially, you know, with the injuries that they've had, you know, but they're just gritting it out. Same with Miami fans. They don't know how far they could go with the injuries they've had, but they're gritting it out. And it's really great to see. And, you know, Brunson has had a difficult, you know, the last game. I'll say the last game. He's been playing, you know, great this season. He had a difficult time. But I feel that I have every confidence that he's going to bounce back in this next game down in Philly. He's going to be the Brunson that we've seen throughout this season. But the way that they are gritting it out, and you see the electricity in the garden, and you see all the Knicks fans, it just makes me smile and happy, because people got to understand, Knicks, we've been needing something to cheer about for so long. So that part is great to see. So I'm just enjoying every win that they have throughout this, and this hard-fought win. You know, this gritty, you know, encompassing the New York, you know what I mean? Everything.
Oh, great.
So that's what I'm enjoying.
Look, you don't want to fight a New York Knick for a loose ball. That's all I want to say. They might take the ball and half a limb.
Right.
The people like Mitchell Robinson, Hartenstein, even Deuce McBride, the guards. I mean, they fight. They fight. And, you know, to connect the two, it's on. I'm not just saying this so we make some connection. Mm-hmm. After the Knicks won that wild game, Dante DiVincenzo, the big three-pointer, the miraculous finish, I got probably half a dozen texts from Palestinian solidarity activists.
Oh, yeah?
Just being like, the Knicks won! You know, these are all folks out of New York, people working at Columbia, people I've been in some contact with. It's just, the Knicks won! And, like, so excited. And it just got me thinking about, you know what? This is sports at its best. Like, here are people in the midst of the struggle, in the heat of what's happening right now. You know, they're facing police. They might be facing the National Guard. Mm-hmm. And they just get this moment where they feel this lift, where they feel this joy, where they feel this happiness. And where they feel it being produced through a process of grit that they are showing on the streets or at NYU or at Columbia. And I love the symbiotic relationship between this team, how it was making people feel, and especially the people on the front lines.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the first thing that I thought of is, you know, my grandfather, and he was a diehard Knicks fan. And I even posted it. I was like, you know, if he was still here, he would have been walking around Harlem high-fiving people in his Knicks jacket with his Knicks hat, just, you know what I mean, celebrating with strangers. And, you know, and that's the feeling when New York does well. You know, the entire city, you know, kind of comes together and rejoices. So it's special. It's special. It's hard to explain to people if you're not, you know, from New York, if you haven't spent time in New York, if you don't have family, you know, who are diehard, you know, New York fans. It's hard to really explain it to them. But it's just this electricity that overtakes them. Whatever is going on in life, you stop and you celebrate the Knicks. You know what I mean? That's the only way that I can describe it.
Yes. Now, you're the only one who can answer this question of the two of us. You always hear commentators say there's nowhere like Madison Square Garden when the garden is rocking. Right, now, you also played in Oklahoma City, which has famous fans that are very loud. Is it in Sacramento is famous for its fans. Is it true that there's nowhere to play like the garden when the garden is rocking, or is that just something broadcasters say?
No, that's definitely true. I mean, playing it there, and that's the thing. It's hard to explain to people. You know what I mean? The level of electricity and the feeling of it. And yes, no, you have some great crowds, like you mentioned, Oklahoma City. You know what I mean? But a lot of that there was because they didn't ever have no pro team, and they're just happy. No, because I played a year there, so they was just so happy. They're like, we're happy to be here. You know what I mean? So it's a little bit different, but they do have that electricity. Sacramento definitely has that electricity. Then you have other places that are front runners. You know what I mean? And you see it. And you know, they're not upset when they lose. They just don't say anything when they lose. And you the passion is a little bit different. I'm not going to name anybody. If you look around, you'll see, you know, people calling different people out. And I definitely see the front running teams. But yeah, no, the Knicks going to keep on fighting, keep on, you know, gritting it out, and you know, it's going to be great to see.
Another question for you, Etan. I'm sorry if it makes you feel like I'm doing an interview here or something, but I got so much I want to ask you. Like, there are two schools of thought on Jalen Brunson, okay, and I'm debating this with my New York people a lot. The one school is that he's the ultimate underdog, drafted in the second round, didn't play too much his first year and a half in the league. People said, oh, the eye test, too short, too squat, no ups, you know, maybe a backup. And now, of course, he's a top five MVP candidate. The other school of thought says, dude was player of the year in college. Dude was one of the top high school players in the country. Dude was just not given the chance, but he's always been that dude. Which school of thought do you, is this an underdog, or is this just recognizing that he's been an overdog all along?
Well, he's got a lot of criticism that he can't be successful, and he's always had that underdog role. And I wanted to ask you, you know, what you thought about, you know, bring up Becky Hammon. And we have all the respect for Becky Hammon on earth, but she was one of the people that joined in the criticism of Jalen Brunson, said he's not a, you know, what did she say, a 1A tier player?
Said he might be your one, but he's not a 1A.
Ah, what does that mean? You know what I mean? That's like saying he's good, but he's not that good. You know, it's those kind of criticisms that has been following him, you know, his entire career, no matter what he achieves. You know what I mean? Whether it's the national championship, like you said, the top five in MVP, voting, whatever it is, he's always had, you know, that type of criticism, that kind of doubt. And I think it really propels him. Like, he thrives off of it. You know, even in Dallas. I mean, when you saw when the Knicks first signed him, like, oh, that's not the person. That's, you know, that's like I said, that has always followed him every step of the way. And, you know, it's not just Becky Hammon who has criticized him. It's a lot of people.
Yeah, no, but the 1A thing is just a perfect example of it as well. Because she said that he wasn't a 1A, Becky Hammon, because of his size. That's what it was all about. She was like, you need a big man to be a 1A, or you need somewhere like a tall wing to be a 1A. And I think there's this part of Jalen Brunson that's like, I'm going to prove every doubter wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm going to dominate. Now, Kelly Oubre is giving him a lot of trouble. Our old DC friend, Kelly Oubre, is giving him a lot of trouble. And yeah. But to me, it speaks to Brunson's greatness that they're like, where's the 6'8" freaky athlete with the arms that go down to his feet? Let him guard the 6'2" guy.
100%. It's a compliment.
Take Kelly Oubre out of the picture for guarding some of the New York wings. Mm-hmm. So even when he's struggling shooting, he's changing the geometry of how the Sixers are playing defense.
I agree 100%. Now, I want to pivot real quick because I want us to touch on the Lakers.
Yes.
There's been so much discussion about the Lakers, and I got to ask you one quick question. Okay, AD was playing, so for all the criticism that he's received, you know, up and down this entire season, I thought he played great for like 2.5, 3 quarters, right? Absolutely. I thought he was really giving Jokic some problems. Jokic looked winded. He was really kind of having his way. Then something happened the fourth quarter. And it's like they changed strategies. And I'm looking at the stats, and I was like, wait, he only has one attempt the entire fourth quarter, as well as he was playing the first three quarters? please, from put on your coaching hat, explain that one to me.
Well, first and foremost, the what comes to mind is Anthony Davis had some criticisms of the coach, Darvin Ham, after the game, saying it seemed like we didn't know what we were doing out there. And Darvin Ham said, well, I just have to disagree with that, when he was asked about it in the press conference. It seemed like the fourth quarter was a little bit planless. I mean, I have to say, because if I mean, I don't know why you don't just keep feeding AD. And if AD is reluctant to shoot, I don't know why you don't call a timeout and just say to him, you've been the best player on this court for 2.5 quarters. Don't let Nikola Jokic be the best player in the fourth. You be the best player in the fourth. Because Anthony Davis, you know, top 75 player of all time, he, of course, has that skill set to be the most dominant player on the court. But like we saw in the playoffs last year, I mean, Nikola Jokic might just be built different. And he's young, and he might be doing this another 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it's tough. Like, Jokic turns it on in the fourth. His clutch statistics, please don't ask me how they measure clutch statistics. This is just what I hear them say on NBA radio. His clutch statistics are through the roof. The Denver fourth quarter statistics are through the roof. They know how to turn it on. And so to see the Lakers kind of turn it off when the Nuggets were turning it on, I mean, that's just losing basketball to me. You know, the Denver Nuggets had no business winning that game. So
I agree. I mean, I will say that the Lakers have to get some kind of production from their bench. I don't see any production at all. I'm not, you know, statistics person or anything like that. But Taurean Prince, he's kind of the only one that comes in and gives any type of scoring whatsoever. What do you make of that?
I think the bench needs serious work. I mean, and this is why they were playing earlier this year with bringing in Austin Reeves off the bench. This is why they were looking at bringing Rui off the bench, because they just, like, they need support in that second unit. But you got to have Reeves and Rui in the starting lineup, because you got to start your best five against Denver, which has arguably the best starting five in the entire NBA. By the way, Denver, another team with a weak bench. I mean, that's could be their Achilles heel in these playoffs. And I say that as somebody rooting for Minnesota very, very seriously.
Wow. I mean, Anthony Edwards, good Lord. You know, I don't like the Jordan comparisons, because I think it's too much to say somebody's like Jordan. You know what I mean? I think it's just hard. But they always try to clarify the early Jordan, like the young Jordan that was just showing his athleticism and learning his way and everything like that. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'm still not that crazy about those comparisons. But he has been very impressive. I would say in a few years, he might be one of the top players in the league.
It's crazy to think that he's 22, mm-hmm. and that a player's prime is generally thought to be 28 to 32. Mm-hmm. So he's scratching the surface.
Yeah,
of what he can do. And I'm just so impressed with his poise. Let me tell you, the last game, for folks who haven't been watching, Anthony Edwards had a monster first game against Phoenix and not a great shooting game. He went 3-for-12 in the second game. Mm-hmm. And yet he controlled the game.
Right.
Had 8 assists, had a bunch of hockey assists, had rebounds, controlled the pace, made Bradley Beal's life, our old friend Brad Beal, miserable.
You did.
On the other end, Brad went 6-for-17, and at one point it looked like Brad was, you know, losing it a little bit because of the way Edwards kept chirping at him.
Yeah.
But, and that's one of the things I do love about Anthony Edwards, though. He just seems to love to be out there and loves playing ball. And I'll take that any day of the week. And I love that their focus is on defense first. I love that they revolve a lot of what they do around being big dudes. Mm-hmm. I love Jaden McDaniels. Karl Anthony Towns sometimes troubles me, but that's a whole, you know, that's okay.
Right, that's okay. Right.
Showing right. up, he does. He's so talented and not always showing up. I love Mike Conley, the point guard. And, I mean, that's my hope, is that the T-Wolves get past the Nuggets, who do look like the class of the NBA right now, especially after Boston's loss to Miami.
I agree.
Winning the game is beyond me, but
Yeah, I agree. Let me ask you something else. You know, Shannon Sharp said that he made a comment a while ago. I haven't seen him walk it back, but he made a comment saying that the Oklahoma City Thunder was possibly the worst number one seed in NBA history. What do you think about that?
Well, as we're having this conversation, they beat the Pelicans by 30 last night.
That they did.
And I know some people say, well, the Pelicans don't have Zion, but the Pelicans played decently this year without Zion. They're not a team that loses by 30. But what I love about Oklahoma City and their coach, Mark Daigneault, is that we all know the cliche that when the playoffs start, you're only playing like seven people, maybe seven and a half. He's sticking with this 11-person rotation because he has talent. So I love seeing someone like who people listening to us might not know, like Cason Wallace. I love seeing him off the bench in a key situation. Isaiah Joe in a key situation. They're keeping the other Jalen Williams because they have two Jalen Williamses in a key situation. You know, I love that he's still using the rotation that got him there and isn't doing that cliche, which could burn his top players out. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a totally legitimate MVP candidate. Jalen Williams, future all the other Jalen Williams, a future all-star, probably as soon as next year. Chet Holmgren, every time I see him, I'm impressed, other than the haircut and the floor-length leather jackets. How many cows had to die for that leather jacket? I mean, you've got a man that big with a full-length leather jacket. I'm sorry. That's just something I'm just looking at him. But that's okay. But smooth player, love Oklahoma City. To me, definitely a threat to get out of the West. I'm not a big fan of the way Shannon Sharp, and especially a certain other person whose nicknames are SS, sometimes say opinions for the sake of provoking reactions.
Yes. I agree.
It's me.
Hard to disagree with that. And I like Shannon Sharp. You know what I mean? But no, it's hard to disagree with that.
How about this? I like Shannon Sharp as well. But I strongly not only disagree that Oklahoma City's the worst number one seed ever, but I'm also not entirely convinced that he actually believes that.
That's another point. I hear you. I hear your point as far as clicks and the way the ESPN, you know, it's like a script that they say certain things that's going to get a reaction, whether it's positive or negative, but whatever, it's bringing eyeballs and bringing clicks, and that's usually the goal, you know?
Well, yeah, but then they go from saying Oklahoma City, worst number one, and oh, by the way, on ESPN Bet, you can put your money down to see if Shannon's right.
Yeah, that's a whole different topic because they promote betting so much. And then, you know, what did they think was going to happen? Oh, that's all. We have to save that whole topic because we only have a few minutes left. But
we talked about Jontay Porter, and we have one.
I mean, it's you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, like how long before a player is involved in any of this. And then the league is going to be like, oh, no, we have zero tolerance for this. This can never happen. This is ethical and everything like that. I was like, well, wait a minute. You're promoting this nonstop, you know, at every chance you possibly can. You're promoting betting. So it's a little dichotomy there.
Let's be real about this. You and I have made a lot of predictions over the years. The easiest prediction we've ever made is that scandal was going to come.
Yeah.
Because of all of this.
I agree.
Easy. And then it happened right after the show.
Anybody with eyes could see that was going to happen. I don't want to give us too much props, but anybody could see that was where it was heading eventually.
Exactamundo. My goodness, we've hit the end of the show a ton. Any last thoughts about the earthquake shaking college campuses and the presidential elections and U.S. foreign policy?
Goodness gracious, that's a lot. But let me give a quick shout out to Coco Gauff because she made a statement. She said, just because you don't support what's happening in Gaza doesn't make you anti-Semitic. She said she feels a sense of helplessness watching Israel's military force in Gaza. And she said that I am not one to shy away from something that I feel informed about. And I feel pretty informed about this topic. She said that in an interview on the Tennis Letter. So got to give her props for standing up and using her platform the way she did.
Absolutely. And all I'm going to say is second to that. I hope every athlete listening to us right now checks out Athletes for Ceasefire. It's so important that we organize. There should be Professors for Ceasefire, Athletes for Ceasefire, Pipe Fitters for Ceasefire. You know, everybody's got to be organizing right now. For everybody out there listening, shout out to Chuck Modiano for the report from George Washington University. Always a shout out to Etan Thomas. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
Are you guys ready to party tonight? Are you?
Yeah.
I'm with you, right? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen.
Hunger. Yeah. They gotta hide their face. They was predicting it fail. Turns out that was not the case. I'm rocking a mask with lots of cash. I look like I robbed a bank. Can't even rob the bank that I use. My money is not with Chase. Foreign deposits safe. So I'm writing it on a private plane. Sometimes I'll be flying commercial. Still, they get rich and become so detached. They music start having that surface feel. Not a subliminal. Speaking in general, feelings get hurt when words get spilled. Sticks and stones may break your bones, but saying my name in a verse will kill. Word of the wise. We heard all them lies before. My number one's come from albums. There's his burgers and fries to go. Go against me, your odds is low. I don't even got no odds for real. Just give me my props for real. I done did everything, I'm about to chill. Count the meals and cribs on top of hills. Mad chips, cash rich, my stash thick. I'm Dr. Phil. Stash thick, I'm Steve Harvey. Bad two friends, hat trick, caught three bodies. And telling them go like they eat 40. Don't want no smoke with me, I'm one of them ones. Tip-torn through the slums, ducking a 100 round drum. I took my lumps way out in Cumberland. They ain't know where I hung. I'm up, stomach still rumbling. They ain't know what I done. Don't want no smoke with me, I'm one of them one. Hop on a song with whoever, I ain't ducking no one-on-one. Hey, pull up the track, I'm about to black. I'm going on a whole nother run. Yeah. So much drama on the street, feel like the beef is random. Murder galore, turning to Thor, I gotta keep a hammer. Case weather get inclement, shots rain on the innocent. The neighbors still don't know who sent them. It's like a secret Santa. Me, I'm out here reaching for a higher frequency. I plan to rest my feet in presidential suites and sleep in beach cabanas. Skeeting on 1,000 count sheets, I'm hitting freaks and tandems. Busting down and throw them in the cab like they from East Atlanta. How I feel to see the flash. To know that he can land him. Every word I speak on beats is guaranteed to feed the fandom. Weakless wanna walk inside my sneakers, watching from the bleachers. Only time they'll see the roles reverse is if they lease a phantom. Bad investment, but what else you had expected? Moms was broke my whole adolescence, never had a lesson. Except for pawn shop hustles, the times collections had a stressing. Couldn't tell if I was poor or just bad at dressing. It was a bit of both. When I took it up top, I took an oath. I was gonna hit a lick, pray bread with my dogs and split a loaf. And take over the game, make sure that my name's considered GOAT. Now I'm back home, it's the best in the world to fall off. Come and hit a growth on God.
The best in live music entertainment is coming this spring to Bethesda Theater. Let's welcome music royalty, The Whispers, performing all their classic songs for two big shows on Friday, April 26th at 8:30 p.m. and again on Saturday, April 27th at 8 p.m. Also coming is Trouble Funk, featuring go-go legend Big Tony, celebrating his birthday by performing all their go-go classics on Friday, May 3rd at 9 p.m. And on Mother's Day, it's Howard Hewitt performing his own popular songs and those by Shalamar, for two shows on Sunday, May 12th at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. The Whispers on April 26th and 27th, Trouble Funk featuring Big Tony on May 3rd, and Howard Hewitt on Mother's Day, May 12th. Get more information on all shows at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Theater.
If you remember Freestyle Union from back in the 90s in D.C., or if you ever heard jazz legend Steve Coleman playing with a virtuoso rapper, or if you've just been keeping up with what's going on in the DMV right now, then you know the artist that is Kokai. One of DC's most original talents, an author, improviser, storyteller, and 2023 Guggenheim Fellow, Kokai comes to Songbird Music House on April 28th for a special concert with his live band presented by Capital Bop. That's Sunday, April 28th at Songbird in Northeast DC. Also on the bill is Baltimore's Conjure Collective, a new group you won't want to miss. Info at capitalbop.com. That's CAPITALBOP.com.
você sabe que eu falo da boca pra fora, que eu me apavoro.
I don't remember how I found WPFW nearly 47 years ago. But when I heard the insightful information and soul-filled sounds coming from my radio, I instantly realized that PFW is the truth and a gift. For nearly five decades, it has bestowed news from a perspective